Welcome back to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast, a ministry of Odyssey Haven coaching and counseling dedicated to the pursuit of answering the question, is it possible to do ministry without hating it? We have a theory that it just might be. Hey, I am back. I am Chad Garrison. I'm here with my friend, Brenton Hill. Brenton, how are you doing?
I am well. What do you want me to say here? Because I can insert anything you want.
Literally anything. Why don't we do the kickoff questionnaire with you?
All right, let's go.
Let's just, Brenton, how do you like your eggs right now?
Scrambled.
Scrambled. Okay. All right. All right. Interesting. It's kind of depending on my mood.
Well,
That's where I go with mine. And listen, we talk about this with our guest on today's episode. I did not pull this out from anywhere and just nowhere. I am not that great at improvisation. I'm probably like more of a C when you come, on the grading scale with improv. I don't know where you land on that.
It depends on the day if I've had enough coffee.
That's right.
I could go. It's a big pendulum from A to F.
Or how tired I am.
Yeah.
I understand. Like, just catch me on Sunday afternoon. It's a fun time.
Right.
Well, so today's episode, we get to sit down for a conversation with our mutual friend, Pastor Dustin Black. He is a pastor. He's a police chaplain, super involved in his community, and more recently, a forestry firefighter. Our very first one of those on this show. And so super excited about that. Great conversation, really just a free-flowing. We talk about all kinds of things, but really at the heart of it is how he actually, and not just because of the name of the podcast, but how he actually has learned to do ministry without hating it, and where he goes and finds really within his rhythms of when he discerns when he is not operating out of that space, and then really how that applies to community as well, and seeing that thrive. And so really, really excited for you to hear this episode, hear this conversation. And so, hey, why don't we get to that? That sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, without further ado, we hope you enjoy our conversation with Dustin Black. Well, Dustin, welcome back. Or two.
Whichever one you want to say.
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have
Thanks
you here.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
I'm glad I finally made the cut.
Please. Please. It's your schedule, buddy, that we had to work around. You're always off fighting some forest or something in the fire.
The trees come after.
You're fighting the literal trees.
They're attacking me.
Listen, Podcast hosts are just like everybody else. We flub our lines. It's fine. What I was alluding to, Dustin, we made a joke about this in the episode that you're going to hear next after this one next month, but that we recorded earlier, but I introduced him and said, hey, no stranger to the podcast. He's like, this is my first time. Like, well, there's the magic is gone. Thanks a lot, Dustin. It's fine. All right. Hey, so we like to kick off with our kickoff questionnaire as we start these interviews. And these are questions that have nothing to do with ministry, but need to be asked anyway. So here's your first one. If you had to delete all but three apps on your phone, which three make the cut and why?
Everlance, because it keeps track of my miles.
Okay.
And I wouldn't want to do that on a regular basis. Probably my podcasts.
Okay.
And my Google Calendar, because my wife and I, that's how we run our lives, is on Google Calendar. And I would be super frustrated without that one. So.
All right. So you hit the three spheres of work, home, and play. So that's good. Good. All right.
I think I could do without most social. Like, if I'm honest, I kill way too much time on social media. Oh. But it probably could do without them. I would figure out something else to do.
I can do absolutely without them. So there you go. All right. So how do you like your eggs cooked?
The only way that they're supposed to be cooked.
Which
over
is
easy.
Over easy. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Has it always been that way for you?
Yeah.
Okay. I only asked that because I had to kind of be eased into. I like over easy as well, but at first I didn't like the runny. But
that's
now,
the best. You can dip your toast in it.
Yeah.
It's the way that God intended eggs to be eaten.
Interesting. All right. If time travel were possible, when and where would you go?
Oh, that's a good question. I love history. So if I wasn't a pastor, I probably was going to be a history teacher.
Oh, wow.
But I like So I love stuff like the, like right before the Civil or the excuse me the Revolutionary War happened. Just the thought process of kind of our early founders and things like that. I think that'd be awesome. Just go have those conversations, especially with the knowledge that we have now of our current country to be like, do you guys see this going this way?
This isn't going to work.
Like, is this what you had in, you know, had in mind and stuff? I think that conversation would be super exciting.
Interesting. All right. All right. I didn't see the history teacher thing coming. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's why we have these hard-hitting questions right at the top. Yeah.
Wow, where'd you think I was going to go?
Lumberjack. I don't know. He's got an amazing beard, so it just fits. All right, what's the best perk you've ever enjoyed at a job?
My current job as a barista, I get free coffee.
Oh, that's perfect.
So I don't know. Or I get to buy beans at cost for home. So.
Oh, nice.
It doesn't get much better than that.
Okay. All right. What are you reading and or listening to right now?
Podcast. I'm actually listening to one again, out of my sphere until recently, but it's called The Hotshot Wake Up. And it's a guy that used to be on a hotshot crew, and he kind of goes through, which has to do with the U.S. Forest Service. I'm sorry if I'm just assuming everybody.
No, that's fine. I appreciate the context.
U.S. Forest Service, wildland firefighting. He used to be on a hotshot crew. So he like gives this rundown of like the current fires that are happening all around the nation. He does stuff like what's happening in Congress and stuff that affects wildland firefighters, talks leadership, talks like it's just kind of super cool. Again, totally out of my sphere of influence, but Wake Up, Hotshot Wake Up. I listen to the Places We Find Ourselves podcast, which is pretty good. A lot of mental health stuff that has been challenging to me, but also helpful just kind of in my bag of tools. And then Bama podcast is one that I listen to quite often. And then reading, Asking Better Questions of the Bible, which is by the guy who's on the Bama podcast, Marty Solomon. And then Praying Like Monks, but Living Like Fools is one that I'm currently just started, the Tyler Staton one. And that's good. I also been listening to a Spotify playlist of alternative rock from the 90s and 2000s.
Nice. So very well-rounded.
All over the place.
Yeah. So I'm just curious what you do with your free time.
What's that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. Last one. What do you find exciting in your life right now?
This new journey into wildland firefighting. I told my wife, if I was 15 years younger, man, I'd be a smoke jumper, jumping out of airplanes into like the craziness of a wildland firefighter. I just think that'd be awesome. And so just this, it's like a whole new world to me. And there's nothing that I've had that has been like this. So it's been pretty exciting.
Okay. Normally I don't springboard from this, and we'll say that we've ended the kickoff questionnaire. Good job. But you have to set up because, you know, and we'll talk about ministry in your context here in just a minute. But how did you get to fighting not the forest, but the fires in the forest?
Yeah.
We'll probably get to more of this later. It's really out of community. I had somebody in my church that is part of the U.S. Forest Service and knows of my role. So I'm a chaplain for our local police department and was familiar. He's been in the Forest Service for a long time. So with some of the needs in the Forest Service, they have the highest suicide rate of any occupation in the U.S., wildland firefighters. Wow. And so was just concerned with them. A lot of them, it's a pretty small community. He knows a lot of them. Almost everybody I talked to in the Forest Service has had people that they know personally that have committed suicide and things like that. So it was one of those, hey, Dustin, how do we kind of bring the things that you do as a chaplain and stuff like that to the Forest Service? Being a federal agency, it's completely different than even like a city or a state type of thing. And so the more we've talked about it, I've interacted, you know, with them on a couple different things. He's like, what if we just put you in it And I said, sure. and so, because
wow. That's funny.
So, well, part of it comes from even my experience with law enforcement is it's a pretty close-knit community. And so it took me a long time of being a chaplain for them to feel like they weren't a project to me, or I didn't have an agenda or any of that. And, you know, they would do things to be like, hey, Dustin, they would tell me things to see if I told anybody else. So it was just one of those, they were testing the waters for a long time. And there was no good way for me to be a law enforcement officer and then kind of go in that way. But this way he was like, man, if we can get you in as a wildland firefighter, maybe that will help kind of speed that process up. And so February, like legit, just started February of this year. I went through all the online training, did field day and a pack test and all of that stuff. And then March, I was in Southern Missouri doing prescribed burns and things like that. And April, the Monday after Easter, I was in Southern Wisconsin doing a prescribed burn down there. And then there was
after Easter,
the Monday after Easter. Yeah.
See, most pastors are trying to put out their own fires. You went out and put out.
Prescribed burn down there. And then there was a fire that there was actual wildfire. So we were out actually like trying to save homes and things like that. It was pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said that. What if we just put you in it? I feel like that was my ministry story, period. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
What if we just put you in here? It. Like, are you sure we want to do this? That's really cool, though. It's a really unique. I think you've even mentioned, you know, when we've talked, almost like from the inside out, mm-hmm. rather from the outside in. And what trust you probably build up with everybody just being one of them.
Yeah. And part of it, it's the language. This is what I'm finding is all of these different communities are just church communities clothed differently, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
And let's just be honest, just community is that we have different language and we have different things that we do and, you know, different priorities. And so it's learning, like this is from an outsider, like it's hard to explain all of those things. But if you're inside, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, so when the Forest Service is known for their acronyms. And I'm like, they start saying stuff. I'm like, I literally have no idea what you're talking about. Huh. But now that you're in it and they say things, I'm like, oh, okay, that I know what that's referring to or whatever. It's changed also how I'm starting to view church and pastoring and those type of things to go, man, if this is how it is to come in new to the Forest Service, I can't even imagine what it is to come in new to church and hear all of these things that people are saying or assuming that I know or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's changed that perspective quite a bit for me.
Well, okay, talk about that, because normally we would ask, what does the word ministry mean to you? And I think we can, but maybe you can wrap that up with what you're talking about in your journey of church and how that has shifted.
Ministry... For a long time, how far back do we want to go?
All the way, buddy. All the way.
It's changed a lot in the last 8 years, but really in the last three. Chad, you and I have had a lot of these conversations. I used to think where I'm at, the position that I'm at right now, was where I wanted to be and what ministry was. Leading a church, being paid full time to pastor, to do ministry, whatever you want to call that. And I've been in this process. I don't want to say deconstructing, because I know that that can trigger some people. But deconstructing is probably the best word for me to use of what ministry actually looks like. I went back and I listened to a lot of the podcasts from you guys and just listened to other people's definition of ministry, because I was like, man, that's a good question. what do other people call it? For me, I really – and this is where I would say your podcast, Ministry Without Hating It. And this is why I would say I don't know if you can do ministry without hating it, but I think you can use your giftings without hating it. And I think that what we do too often is that we put our giftings inside of this thing that we call ministry, and then we add all of this stuff to it. That we aren't designed or built for. And so I think when I use my giftings, that I can do that. And I think that's what ministry is. And I don't hate it. And I actually love it because I'm doing what God has called me to do. When I put add things to that that are I'm not designed for, that's when I start hating ministry, is because of the expectations. A lot of them are just self expectations, but the expectations and the extra things that I add to that that I was never designed or created to do.
So yeah, you talked just a little bit about that, maybe more. What are the, when you think for you personally, the things that you add that you, like you just said, I'm not designed to do, therefore now I despise what I'm doing because I'm going against my creation. What does that look like?
So I think in the structure of the church, a lot of that has to do with expectations from people. Again, even my own expectations of it needs to look this way. That's why you and I have had the conversation of different things that I've stopped following on social media because of comparisons. But even inside of our own denomination, all of us are Foursquare pastors, and they say like, well, hey, it's not about numbers or it's not about this, but what's the one paper that we have to fill out every month? What does it ask us?
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. And yeah. So we can say it's not about those things all we want to, but that's the only way that we, for the most part, are judged for what we do. Even then there's the church aspect of, you know, people saying, Dustin, you don't visit us enough, or you don't call us enough, or you don't like, and then you have all the stuff that comes as pastors of getting quotes to get the parking lot resealed or plumbing done, or what are those things? And I'm like, again, I can do those things. Like but to now we've labeled that under the ministry of pastoring, right? Like, let's like think about all the things that fall under that label of ministry and pastoring. And I'm like, I just don't think that's what it was ever intended to be. So I'm trying to meet all the expectations of what ministry is. And again, a lot of it's just history of what we've put under the leadership of pastoring. But I'm like, I try to meet all of those things. But now I'm working as a chaplain. I work as a barista at a coffee shop, and I'm working in the Forest Service. And I'm actually using those same giftings, and I don't hate it. I absolutely love it because I'm like, there's no expectations that I'm calling anybody extra. There's no expectation that I'm making sure that we got a quote for whatever. Like, there's like the expectations are what goes with the job, and the ministry just happens because of the position that I've allowed myself to be put in. And I think that's what we've changed is that, and to be honest, that's where I'm working even as a locally here in my own congregation, is to go, man, I want to quit getting paid to pastor. And I want to, if you're going to pay me, you're going to pay me to be the CEO of a nonprofit organization.
Interesting.
Because I'm asking the same thing of everybody else in my congregation. What do you do for a living? Oh, you're work for UPS or you're a teacher or whatever. Awesome. That's what you get paid to do. That's your job, right? But then when you come to church, what are your giftings and how are you using that locally? And I'm not going to pay you to do that. Like, that's just part of being in a congregation, being part of a local body. So then why do I expect – and again, this is – I want to be careful because I've been doing this long enough that I don't want anybody to feel the convict. Like, this is not to guilt anybody else. This is just my own journey that I've been in.
Sure.
I want to be able to stand on the same level and look people in the eye and say, I'm not getting paid to do my gifting either. I'm getting paid – again, because somebody has to make sure we have insurance. Somebody has to make sure the parking lot's getting plowed. Somebody has to make sure that these things are being taken care of. And I'll do that. Like, I have no problem doing that. But if I speak on a Sunday morning, I want to do that because that's my gifting. And I feel like I need to share that with the local body. If I'm leading worship, if I'm visiting people, if I'm doing any of those things, it's because that's who God has created me to be. And I'm using this as part of my giftings with the local body. It's the same expectation that I want to put on everybody in our congregation.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that ministry is not necessarily the vocation, right? That's the overflow of who God has created me to be, the giftings that he has given me. My vocation is the job description. Right? Yes. Is that right?
Yeah, and we marry those things too often. And that's why I think we say, can we really do ministry without hating it? And I'm like, well, not in our in our typical context. But if we can learn to separate those things, then I think we probably – and again, if you're doing what you God has called you to do – and I'm not saying you don't have bad days. We all have bad days. But if you're doing what God has created you to do, like it's just part of who you are.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to hate that, or I don't hate it, because I'm like, this is just completely natural for me. Right. And I'm not in a position that is requiring me to do something that – I am not gifted to do. Now, God always asks us to do things where he steps in and, you know, gives us strength in our weakness and all of those type of things. But he's designed us and given us a purpose. And I think it's when we step outside of that, that we start hating it, because it's just, it's too much for us to carry.
I'm glad you clarified that. Because yeah, if you don't, you can start to come across as this anti-church missional hipster, right? Like I don't need it, you know, and nobody should be paid, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you know, somebody's still got to run things. Right. But I think that's a great way of contextualizing that, is that, you know, it's not, you're right. I love how you said CEO. Cause that there are times I feel the exact same way. It's like, man, I hate doing the numbers and the admin budget stuff. Yeah. Like that's not, yeah. What were you gonna say? Go ahead, Brendan.
The way you described it, that's perfect, because I did a lot of this stuff for free well before I stepped in. And when I got a ministry role, what did I start doing? I started doing administrative scheduling, running, mm-hmm. like we have a daycare. So now I'm running a daycare and like all of these things in the background. Like these are not, there's pastoral things that happen inside of those contexts, but that's not necessarily what a pastor right. Like that's not the shepherd. That's not the, that is a business owner or a, you know, so
yeah.
that helps.
I don't think it's pastoring for me to have to call 17 plumbers to finally get one call back to fix the urinal. Right. Like, does that have to do with me being a shepherd? Right. Absolutely right. Nothing. That's like, so, but we've still stuck that under this idea of what a pastor is supposed to be.
Right. Yeah.
And again, those are the things that I'm like, that's what drains me. Those are the mm-hmm. things. But again, if I can separate it, if I can go, man, I'm getting paid to do this. Awesome. Yeah. Like we've all worked jobs that were like, I don't like this part of my job, but I'm getting paid to do it. So I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And then it also just changes the expectation of my congregation when they're like, hey, Dustin, you should do this. I'm like, actually, I think you should do that.
Yeah.
That's actually your gifting more than it is mine.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I don't ask you to preach. Why? Because you're like, that's not my gifting. Awesome. I don't want you to do something that's not your gifting.
So, maybe tell us within that frame, you've talked a little bit about it, but maybe pull it out just a bit more, what the success then looks like, or the wins within how you've just defined and really, really, really well separated ministry versus vocation.
So for me and our congregation, though, I mean, I literally beat people over the head with this, is we're going to be a congregation of community. For those that don't know, I became the lead pastor of this church during the pandemic in 2020.
Woohoo!
Great time for a pastoral transition.
Yes, I agree. That's when I did mine too. You were there.
Yeah, I was. Great. And you were at mine.
That's right. So weird. But, that's because we could travel wherever we wanted during that time. That's why.
Exactly. But for me, it was this realization that people had a common practice of coming to church on Sunday morning, but they didn't really have community. Mm-hmm. And so, which frustrated me. I got frustrated with how many conversations I had with people that were talking about how lonely they were and all of these things. And I'm like, what in the world? You've been part of this congregation or part of this supposed family. And I'll do air quotes. You can't see me because I'm on a podcast. But how many people, I'm like, you guys have been supposedly friends for the last 15 years. Like, what do you mean you're lonely? Mm-hmm. And so it was this realization that community wasn't really happening. We were having a shared event, but not shared community. And so for me, the last 3 years has really been this push for community to say, so for instance, I actually had this conversation in my staff meeting last week. I was asked, well, what about connect groups, Dustin? I'm like, to be honest, connect groups are actually supposed to fail. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I said, because if if in the modern idea of what a connect group is, I said, it's just become another church service that people show up to and leave. And I said, so the how I'm known that our connect groups have been successful is that the people that were in connect, like those connect groups are actually no longer meeting, but the people that are in the connect groups are still friends and hanging out with each other outside of the connect group. And I'm like, awesome, that connect group worked. It caused people to have community, to have relationship. That so now the church can remove itself, the church in the typical sense of the church, the church can remove itself from having to facilitate what that meeting looks like to now you guys are just having the, in essence, a connect group by yourself and we have nothing to do with it. It's not even, we can't even really quantify it. All we're looking at is, yes, these people are connected with other people that would call Grace Foursquare their community. And I said, so if a connect group keeps going and keeps going, keeps going, and that's not happening, I actually want that connect group to end and for them to start another one with other people, because it just meant that those people were not your people, that you're not actually you're not connecting with them outside of that connect group. So we have tons of connect groups that have started and ended, and they're successful because community has started out of them. And so for me, that's the hard thing. Like, I have to constantly remind my staff and other people, leadership in the church, but I have to constantly keep reminding myself, because I go back to numbers, right? Like, that's just what we do. Mm-hmm. And to go, so we'll have a women's event, or we'll have a men's event, or we'll have a special event, and go, typically the question is, how many people showed up, right? Like, how many? And now my question is, did we facilitate community? Was there an opportunity for people to know people that they didn't know before? Was there an opportunity for people to have conversation that they weren't having before that? And if those things happen, I don't care if there's four people there, like, awesome. The goal of who we are took place at that event, and that's a win for us.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. Go back to that, you know, asking the actual question, how can I do it without hating it, right? And take it then into perspective what you just said, and even your, you know, defining wins and successes, right? And, I mean, maybe pull those together, and how does that actually look for you as well?
Well, again, if I'm going to – if I'm going to do ministry by the typical metrics of what ministry is based, I'm going to hate it. There's no way I can't, because there could always be more people. There could always be more money. There could always be things I'm doing better. There's always somebody else out there doing it better. I've said this 1,000 times, like, we are not a cool church. We just aren't. There's people in our own community that do better worship, that speak better, that do all of these things that traditionally are what is a church is judged by. And we're not cool. And I even tell people, like, man, if you want a cool church, like, there's lots of cool churches, right? Especially now since the pandemic, that put their stuff online. Wait, like, if you just want a cool church, like, don't follow ours. But if you want a church that actually wants to have community and is like, that's who we are, and that's what our vision is, and that's what our desire is, then maybe check us out. But you're not going to feel any pressure from me either way. But for me, so that's what helps to me separate ministry without hating it, is the fact that I don't have to. How many people show up, or if things are successful in the typical sense, or not, has nothing to do with me.
That's good.
What does have to do with me is I have to be the person that helps facilitate those things to go, hey, let's try this. I throw out ideas and things like that. I'm the one that cancels a lot of ideas, because it's like, nope, that goes back to who we were before, and I don't want to go back. I want to keep moving forward. And so for me to do ministry without hating it is to go, what are my giftings? What am I good at? Like, what? I'm okay. Like, I'm okay with confrontation. I know there's a lot of people that don't like it. I'm like, man, I'm really okay with it. Probably my wife would tell you too much so sometimes. But, you know, so I'm, you don't want to have those conversations as a leader? Awesome. I'll have that conversation for you, and I'll shield you from some of those type of things. And so just, I do ministry without hating it by just functioning in the giftings that God has given me. Chad, you can attest to, a year ago, I wasn't doing that. And I was at the, like, I was to the place that I'm like, screw it, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. If this is what ministry is, I actually want nothing to do with it. And so I had to go through this process of kind of separating those things. And I'm not saying I'm there yet or it's perfect, but I'm in a way better place right now than I have been in a long time. So,
yep, good enough to be on a podcast that's called Ministry Without Hating It. Because I remember we joke around before and you're like, no, don't have me on. That's probably why you're just now coming on, if we're going to really get down to it. No, and I mean that jokingly, of course, but
I don't.
Well, all right. Do this for me, because I think this might be helpful too for some people. Talk about, you've mentioned a little bit about your ministry context and where you're at. Maybe even just the setting, and you can talk about church history if you'd like as well. We know you've been with the church, but more recently become the lead. How have you found yourself in adapting to really just in your leadership or maybe even in your approach when it comes to ministry and your setting there?
So we're in northern Wisconsin. That has snow from October till we got snow this year, even into the first part of May. We're actually, it is kind of interesting watching that plays a huge impact on how people interact with one another. It's almost like when things are snowed in, everybody just kind of, bundles up and stays home and waits and hopes the sun comes out eventually. But we're even seeing that even in how people interact with one another. It's kind of like, hey, it's snowing, I'll see you in the spring type of thing. We're very Catholic Lutheran up here. So there's this history of the Lutheran Church and the Catholic Church and people that that have overcome is not the right word, but just set a different context for people to understand. People have been in our church for a long time still ask me to baptize their grandkids or whatever. And I'm like, you've been in this church for 30 years. You've never seen a baby get baptized here. Like, why do you think? So it's just some of those things, like overcoming those type of context. Historic church, like we've been around since 1932. There's me, there was a pastor before me, and that transition has all happened within the last 8 or 9 years. But before that, the two previous lead pastors were here for over 30 years. There's history, there's this idea of what church is supposed to be, there's this idea of how, pastors are supposed to pastor. And so when you come in, as I have, and for those of you who know me, those who don't, I'm third generation pastor. So I understand all of that. My grandpa was a pastor for a long time. My dad was a pastor. I grew up going to church. Like, this is all the things that I know. And so there was, and that's why I say deconstruction actually is probably the best word for me of even what ministry looked like, is I had to shift some things. And part of that shift was me even saying the way I grew up or some of the things I learned in ministry from my own parents and grandparents were probably not the most healthy. And that's a hard place to go to sometimes. And with that, so I can walk with people through a progression of going, hey, I understand why this is hard. I understand why this is could even sound hurtful, because what I'm saying now is that something that was super meaningful in your spiritual walk, something that you feel is even a core thing, we're not going to do anymore. Hmm. And that shakes people. But I can also say that was core in my experience too. And I've had to get to this progression, and let me walk with you a little bit through that progression, because I had to go through the same thing as well. And so it's just a process. Again, it comes from community. And it takes time. I think that's probably the thing I've learned the most recently is, I want things to go way faster than they go. I want to put in less time and just see more results. And the reality is this type of ministry actually just takes a lot of time, a lot of time.
So I'm going to say this. I'm going to preface this. One of the things I've always appreciated about your perspective is that you love the church, but you don't love what the church can be sometimes. Mm-hmm. But you also know and love what the church can become, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've always appreciated that you're not like, well, it's all just got to go. And we talked about that earlier. Like, it's just, you know, no, let's go do it differently. And, you know, you don't swing one side or the other, but you really do have an even keel approach, even if it doesn't happen as fast as you want it to be. So walk us through then, what's your approach to pursuing what you feel like the church is called to be?
I think that starts very personally, is you have to understand what God is calling you to do. And again, inside your own context and inside of what that looks like for your own, we'll keep using the word ministry, I would say, but really what you're gifted in, and to go, okay, so if for me to function in these giftings, how would that look in a church? And I'll look at, I'm as I've told you before, I love history and I can read early church history or whatever, but I've even been asking people, hey, like, let's just look at what's happening in the church in Acts, what's happening in the church. And I am not one of those people like, oh man, we got to do church exactly like they did in Acts, but to go, man, what in the world makes me think Dustin at 40 years old has all the answers, right? Like, my context is very closed if we actually think about it. And the fact that I grew up in a church, I grew up in a Christian home, I was, you know, I mean, that's all I know. So to go, oh yeah, well, Dustin, because he went to Bible college, like, he's got the answers. And I'm like, that just seems very closed off. And so I'm like, man, how do we look at people who've had one of the guys on our speaking team is a teacher, and, you know, it's kind of like a whole different perspective. And I'm like, let's keep inviting people to this conversation, to show different perspectives, to show different thoughts, to agree and to disagree with one another. Like, that's been huge lately in our churches. Go, people can say things. This has been super hard for me as a pastor. Uh-huh.
Go ahead. Go.
People can say things from the pulpit, and I've said this, that I disagree with, but I think it's so good for us to hear it.
And when you say that, to pause you, this is, we're not talking heresy, right?
No. Uh-uh.
Right.
I think, again, we have basic things that we agree on what salvation is and the Holy Spirit and, you know, the Trinity and those type of things. But to go, how he applies that scripture is probably not how I would think that we should apply that scripture. But it challenges my own theology to go, okay, maybe Dustin needs to shift some things in his theology. Mm. But it also causes our church to have conversations that if I just did the typical thing that I would do, would never cause our church to think differently. And we live in a world now that there's constant things coming at us all the time to go, again, not to ever excuse things that we think are contrary to the word of God, but to go, is that a sin? Does that really separate us from God? Is that
so good? I was just going to say, that's so good to ask those questions and not just go, I learned this and this is what it is. So,
I mean, I grew up in an old school Pentecostal type of mindset of where my mom wasn't allowed to co-ed swim, and she wasn't allowed to drink Coca-Cola, and she wasn't allowed to, like, so all of these things that, matter of fact, they weren't allowed to wear jewelry. And this is here's a prime example of stuff that the church has done. So they had like a convention, right? Like at that time, their denomination, and they came back and they said, well, we decided at the convention that women are allowed to wear wedding rings. And I look at her and go, what?
What?
I was like, what did you? I said, did you just freak out? And she's like, well, no, we just started wearing what? I'm like, I would have been like, well, what other things are you keeping from me that are like, that you said were sins that are not sins now? Like, I'm like, I would have lost it if that would have happened, you know, to me. And I said, but I still do that, right? Like, there's still this thing, because if you've grown up in the church, you know, we don't smoke and we don't chew and we don't run with girls that do that. That we've put this idea of what we think is sin, or what we think is, you know, that we contextualize in a way that makes certain things worse than others. And I'm like, let's just have the conversation. I'm not saying those things aren't wrong, but are they, you know, is smoking a cigar or, you know, a cigarette or having a glass of wine or whatever. Are those things actually sin? Now, are they beneficial? I don't know. Like, let's have that conversation. But are they? Do they separate you from God? Really? Is that what does it? Like, do we actually want to look at people in Scripture? You know, let's talk about David, the man after God's own heart. Like, you're like, uh-huh. Really? Like, we uh-huh. want, do we really want to make those comparisons at what we think is sin and what we don't think is sin, what God thinks is sin, what he doesn't think is sin? Like, let's make sure before we get to the place where we're saying this is the standard, A, that we can actually uphold the standards, or otherwise we're just Pharisees, or start putting, as Jesus tells the Pharisees, you're making this thing way harder than it's supposed to be. And I've said all along, salvation is super easy. Being a follower of Jesus is super hard. And to me, that's where I want to make salvation as easy to people, for people to find as possible. And then we're going to challenge each other through community to live for Jesus completely differently. So
that's really, really good. Dustin, you've used the word community a lot, and I want to drill in on that for a second, if you're okay with that. Because so I have had the opportunity several times to visit your community, as we would call it, and be a part of your church. And I feel like that is something that you guys do really, really well. And I think we're hearing some of why and how you continue to reinforce that. But I'm curious if there's anything else that you would personally attribute that to, or maybe what you would say actually sustains that continued, I don't know, like, I don't say focus, but like what sustains the level of community which you're able to see?
A lot of work. It is. It's a lot of me giving time. It's a lot of, again, a lot of it has to be demonstrated, that as I think a lot of times pastors are actually not very good at community. I think we're good at talking about community, but we're not very good at actually living in community because we don't want to expose areas of our lives. And so I think part of it is me getting up on a Sunday morning and talking about how Chad and I have had a conversation about things that I'm struggling with. It's about me taking some of the guys in our church that we've been meeting Sunday nights for almost 7 years now, every Sunday night. It doesn't matter if I'm gone or if other people are gone. Like, there is a guy sitting by a bonfire or in a garage waiting to have community with some of the guys in our church. It's us constantly reinforcing the idea of this is what community – like, to be honest, as much as 2020 sucked, it also was like this perfect going, see, guys, how we were doing church before wasn't working. Like – you can't say it was. All of you are like, this was horrible and I had no friends or whatever. So now I have like this real thing that happened that I can go see. It wasn't working. So what do we have? Like, what do we have to lose in if we keep trying this? Like, if doing something different, what do we have to lose? Like, it can't be much worse than we were before. And so just keep focusing on that to go, how do we keep creating things for community? It's to even how we do church cleanup. We're talking this year about, instead of going, oh, let's have a church cleanup day and see how many people want to go, to start saying, hey, guys, here's the things that we need done. How about you get some people and do it? Mm-hmm. Like, here's a list and sign up with the people that you want to do this with. Because this is not just my church. Like, this is your church. And if you don't care about it, I don't care about it. Like, right. If this is all, to me, I want to leverage every asset that we have to continue to build community and not to, like, the church falls apart. I've told Chad this before, like, and I even tell our staff, if our church catches on fire, wait at least an hour before you call 911, right? That's a joke, kind of.
Well, what do you mean? Yeah, no, those kind of. Okay, tell us what you mean.
We use so many assets to maintain. I mean, we have great facilities. Yeah. You know that. We have a beautiful church. We have what we call our Family Life Center that has a gymnasium and classrooms and all of those things. You know what my biggest headache is? all of that. Right. And I spend a lot of time of, again, trying to make sure we have the right insurance, trying to make sure that things are taken care of. Like, I'm getting ready to do a floor project in our gymnasium because the floor is falling apart. And I'm getting quotes for $45,000, $50,000, $70,000 going, like, really? Like, this is what I'm supposed to be spending this much money as a pastor? This is what I'm supposed to be spending this much money on? And again, I have to be a good steward of what we have, right? Like, we've been given these things, and people throughout our history put a lot of time and resources and their own blood, sweat, and tears. And so I feel an honor, but an obligation to take care of it. And to go, you know how much easier it would be if the whole thing just got wiped out by a tornado and we actually had to like go back to meeting in each other's homes, and the money I get from insurance I can use to like help people pay for lunches for those communities or what, like I can actually put the funding that we have towards building community and not taking care of buildings. Now, so part of that is how do we leverage our buildings and things like that for community? So probably one of the most controversial things I've done now as a senior pastor is we allowed our facility, our gymnasium, to be used for COVID testing and then for COVID vaccines. Now I've gotten some negative feedback on that of like, I can't believe you did it. And I'm like, first of all, I never said anybody should get a vaccine. I never said anybody should, like, never has been a thing. All we said in our council made this decision corporately was there's a need in our community and we can actually meet that need. And I now have directors of, you know, of our health department. I have directors of nursing. I have directors of like planning for, you know, catastrophes and stuff like that, contacting the church saying, first, thank you so much. And how do we continue to partner together in the future? And I'm like, again, so I'm going to keep, I mean, we have a homeschool co-op that meets during the year that has nothing to do with our church. Yeah. Like there's people in our church that attend it, but nobody in our church oversees it. It's not even what I would consider a Christian co-op. Like it's just a homeschool co-op that there's 40 something families in our community that are a part of it. And every Tuesday there's 60 kids running around our gymnasium. Hmm. And so I'm like, let's continue. If I'm going to take care of these things, then let's continue to use them for more than just Sunday morning or Wednesday night events. Yeah. Like if I'm going to spend money, if I'm going to use resources, then they're going to benefit our community, which also benefit like corporately, like our Rhinelander or Oneida County community, but then they're also going to benefit us in the long run as a community here of this church.
I would agree with that, Dustin. We have a gymnasium as well, and it used to be only for us and nobody else. And that's the community then started to look at us like very exclusive and we don't want to work with anybody. And so we started doing some things like opening it up to basketball leagues. So they practice there, opening it up to toddlers and mom yoga and just community events for them to build relationship with people in the community. And, it changes the way that people outside of the church look at your church.
Dude, we had a policy that said if you had a wedding in our facility, and you used the gym, there couldn't be dancing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you know what? You know who was actually use our gymnasium to practice? The dance team.
Yeah, yeah, good.
Like, so I'm like, what are we doing? Yeah. Like at some point, like why do we have buildings or facilities if it's just for us? That just doesn't make sense to me. Now again, you have to be careful. There's liability stuff. Like I understand all of that. There's policies that even we have now to try to protect some of those type of things. But if I can say yes, I try to say yes as much as possible, which again goes back to building community. I tell people in our church all the time, if they're like, oh, Dustin, we should have men's ministry. I'm like, awesome, you should lead it. And they're like, well, no. And I'm like, I don't need one more thing to do. Like right. I have plenty of things.
That's right.
But if that's on your heart, like, and I tell people all the time, if you have something that you feel like you're supposed to do, I want to resource the crap out of you, but I'm probably not going to show up.
That's
so
great.
So for instance, we have there's a lady in our church that's an elderly lady that she likes to lead worship and things. Well, she does these hymn sings, and she's been doing them about once a quarter. I've gone to hymn sings before. That's just not my thing, right? Like, let's be honest, I don't really want to do a hymn sing. Right. And so she asked me.
That was the third vocation I was going to choose for you was hymn director. Yeah. So I was way off on all of these things.
That's I mean, I could definitely do it because I know more hymns than most people.
You probably do.
But so she's like, Dustin, I want to do hymn sings. I'm like, awesome. So I made we announced it. We made graphics for it, all of those things. I said, I just want to be very good with you. I'm not coming. And she goes, what do you mean you're not coming? I said, I already have plans. She's like, every time we have one of these, you have plans. I said, yep. and so she's like, and I'm like, but I said, part of it is us demonstrating to the church that you can do community things. You can have like, so she invites other churches to come. She invites like other people in the community. I'm like, keep rocking it. And she keeps having these hymn sings and the pastor doesn't show up. And I'm like, but they still keep happening. And so that goes back to how do I not hate ministry is I stop going to things that I don't want to go to. Like, let's be honest, like I get invited to things just because of my title right. or my position. And I'm like, I don't want it. Like, we're not in yeah. community. I don't want to be with you. And there's not, that's okay. Like, yeah. why have we made it where pastors can't say no to hanging out with people?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, or doing things out of obligation. I'm like, I just don't want to, get to that place.
We get to be,
back in that place.
We get to be so busy with stuff programmed that we can't have genuine community. Because of all mm-hmm. the expectations or whether real or self-imposed. But then that robs of genuine community.
We only have so much time. Excuse me. We only have so many resources. We only have. And so, you know, I'm a dad. I have three kids, a 13, 11, and 8-year-old. Again, I work at a coffee shop. I am a chaplain for a local police department. I'm doing this Forest Service stuff. Like, I only have so much time that I don't want to waste it doing things that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And not just – I take that back. That's probably not the best way to say it. I don't want to do things that are not – towards what I feel like my calling is in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yep.
Cause there's sometimes that I do things that are towards my calling in life that I really, again, I was on a suicide intervention on Friday night. I don't want to do that. That's I'm like, ooh, sign me up for one of those.
Yeah.
But that has something that God has positioned me for and given me the giftings to do. And so I'm like, yep, I can do that. And willing to do that as opposed to go to a hymn sing, then I'm just like, that doesn't give me life and it's not my giftings or my calling. So you can do it. And again, I'm going to make sure that the lights are on and you have the sound equipment that you need and everything's ready to go. I'm just not going to show up.
Well, I think it reinforces what you said in the very beginning too. It's who God created me to be, the giftings he's given me. And that models that. It's the healthy boundaries, I think. I think that's the thing. You talk about, you know, the way things with your parents growing up in ministry, you know, there were unhealthy things. I think that was one of the things that we're starting to see a lot more talked about as those unhealthy boundaries that they were unhealthy because they didn't fit who we were or who, like you even said, who we're even supposed to be doing. And honestly, it's a lack of being able to release somebody else to do it because I'm the only one that should or can do this. And so I think that's really, really healthy and great self-awareness, Dustin. I really do.
But again, that's come – Chad, you and I have had these conversations for a couple of years now that I've gotten to that place. But again, this is growing up in a church where my family, as pastor's kids, we did everything. I learned to play the instruments. I learned how to play this because my dad be like, oh, we don't have a drummer. We need a drummer now. I'm like, I guess I got to learn how to play the drums. I was teaching Royal Rangers at like 12 years old.
Oh, nice.
So that's why, I mean, even the conversation with one of the ladies at our church that leads worship, she was like, you know, we were doing like a worship night and somebody asked her, well, how long have you been leading worship? And she's like, probably longer than anybody else here. And she gave her years. And I'm like, actually, I've been leading worship longer than you have. And she's like, really? And I said, yeah, I led worship for the first time at 12. And so, like, I have 30 plus years now of, you know, almost 30 years of leading worship experience. But in the same regard, so I saw, you know, parents burn out, but kept doing ministry out of obligation. I had, because of things that were happening in the congregation, my dad would board our doors at night because of threats and stuff made from church people.
Wow.
Like,
it's
so
that's because you were leading worship. That's probably why
they were like, this is horrible. But so I saw a lot of these things and I thought that that's how church was supposed to be. And to be honest, like, I think because of our expectations, we often live out what our expectations are. Right. And so seeing that and feeling that that's what church was supposed to be, I would kept putting myself into those situations and then going, man, this just doesn't feel right. And it's a realization at some point that maybe I wasn't always taught the best things. I mean, I read my mom sent an email to a longtime mentor of hers and even mine and my dad's. And she didn't, my mom's not always great with technology and didn't realize that she had copied me on a response that she had sent to him about me and it was about something that we were talking about. And so she writes him and says, like, I don't even know if, like, I don't know, something about the Holy Spirit or whatever that her and I had had a conversation about. And she's like, I don't even know where he comes up with these theologies. Sometimes I even wonder if he loves Jesus, right? And so she sends this to this mentor of ours, and I end up getting it, and she doesn't realize that I get it. And I'm like it took me a minute, right, to go, this is somebody I love and I've looked up to my whole life, right? My mom, and she's still in ministry and still serving Jesus and all of those things, and going, like, it was hurtful. But then in the same regard, I'm like, but it's probably a good place for me to be where I don't want to just be a contrarian, but I do want to go, are the things that I learned, the things that I know, the things I'm holding on to, are they real or are they things that I've just been given to me?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And if I can say they're real, then I'm going to hang on to them with everything that I am. But if I can say that they've just been given to me, then I got to be willing to let those things go. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your vulnerability in that. I know that's what a fun story, but at the same time, to have the presence of mind to just not go, Mom, what the heck? What's up with that? You know, and actually take a step back. I think that's really, really great.
I mean, we did have that conversation later, but.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. Well, watching your time, Dustin, I've just got one more question that we'd like to end with. And just as we're looking forward, and especially as what you've learned, what you're seeing, you can say for your context, or you can even say really is what you're beginning to see ministry, church, altogether. What is it that's encouraging or inspiring you as you're looking ahead to what's next?
I think both in my context, but I think even in the conversations that I'm having with young pastors, I can't even say young pastors.
You say younger than you. How about that?
Well, because we're not young anymore, right? Like,
right.
That's
right.
The scary part. But even in our context, but even people who are younger than us or younger in ministry than us, is willing to have the conversations of can ministry be different? Can church be different? As we all know, the statistics are showing people are leaving church and leaving that context. People are leaving the ministry. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've had conversations with in the last couple of years that have been in ministry for a long time and, like, we just can't do it anymore. Mm. And instead of I don't know if these are happening corporately, to be completely honest, but I know that they're happening relationally, is that people are going, how do we not have ministry without hiding? How do we have these conversations? How do we encourage one another? How do we walk alongside one another? And so I think the church, which to me means that the church is actually going to probably get smaller, if I'm being completely honest, is that that the church is getting to a place of real community and real relationship. But with that, we are also understanding, like, unlike Facebook or any of these social medias, that, oh, look, I have all these friends. Reality is you don't. That we're starting to understand, I have a few people that I can be super honest and vulnerable with. And with those people, I can be real and I can talk about Jesus and I can talk about my struggles and I can talk about how awesome life is. And I can talk about how crappy. Look, I said crappy, so you didn't have to edit me.
You've done it a couple times already. But it's
I may
fine.
Beep it anyway, but, just for the fun.
Oh man! Just so people can infer something else. That'd be great.
But I think it's causing us to have real conversations, and it's going to take a while for that to become the norm. But I think even just podcasts like this, I think us saying, forget what denominations say, forget what, you know, church history says. If we don't change something, there's not going to be a church for Jesus to come back to. And that terrifies me. And so I want to do everything that I can. And I think that we're starting to see a lot of ministers and a lot of people who hold the position of pastors go, let's at least have the conversation, because it's not looking great. So how do we at least try to do something different to make it better?
It's good. That's good. Well, Dustin, I really just appreciate, you know, this. We love your perspective on ministry, and just even, just continuing to just champion what you guys are doing up there in the North Woods. And this has been really, really, this has been just refreshing for me, and I know it will be for several others. So I just want to say thank you for being a part of this. It's just been awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Just want to be clear, I still love Jesus.
Despite what mom says.
Despite what my mom says, I still love Jesus a whole bunch. And that's, if I didn't, I wouldn't do this. Right. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. There's way easier. Like, I'll just go be a UPS driver or something else. But I love Jesus. I love his church. And I love you guys. Like, part of why I do what I do is because I know that there's Chads and Brentons that are still doing it too. And I'm like, man, if they can do it, I can do it. And if they can, you know, if I can help them in any way, then like, let's go.
I feel the same. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Love you.
Yeah.
Love you.
Until next time, my friend. Well, thanks again for joining us for this episode of Ministry Without Hating It. We hope it's helped you take a step further to loving what you do more through the wisdom of others. Once again, we want to thank our guest, Dustin Black. Really just some great stuff, really practical, down-to-earth stuff. I hope that you were able to grab and apply to right where you're at right now. If you'd like to connect further with Dustin, we have made ways to do so available in the episode show notes. And if you'd like to connect further with us, support the podcast, or sign up for show updates, just go to withouthatingit.com to get started. And don't forget to subscribe to Ministry Without Hating It wherever it is that you get your podcast, so you don't miss out on future episode releases. Once again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Boom. All right.